Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the friendly confines of CAC 214. Or as we've said in previous days, this is Smothers Overflow, so when they have something really, really popular in Smothers, that's how we get our people is to come here. So thank you. Thank you for coming, and thank you for the courtesy laughs. I appreciate that. It's good. We are glad that you're here. We are the presenters of the class. We are interim ministry partners. We work with churches primarily that are in transition between pulpit ministers. But from working with those churches and those kinds of transitions, we've learned a few things about helping churches with all kinds of transitions. My job this morning, I'm Mark Frost. I'm here to just give a brief introduction to what we'll be talking about today. These are the interim ministry partners. There are, three of us in the room this morning? Four of us. Myself and Tim Woodruff and Phil Ware and Brett Testerman. But the rest are up there, Greg Anderson, Bruce Black, Doug Peters, Rebel Shelley. We all work together as a partnership, and God has blessed us with the opportunity to work in a lot of churches, 15 currently in the current year. And you can read them there as well as I can read them off. So you just take a look at the variety of churches all over the country that we've had an opportunity to work with. And we have more inquiries coming in all the time, and just convinces us that this is a huge need in our brotherhood. So the last 2 days we have talked about, 2 days ago we talked about the opportunities of the interim season. Basically the idea that being between preachers is not just a bad thing. There is an opportunity for some good things to happen in churches. We talked about the wilderness experience of Israel as being a paradigm that we can look to for those opportunities. The wilderness being a season of testing, a platform for God's revelation, and a crucible for God's transformation. So that was on Tuesday. Yesterday we talked about the leadership challenges in that transition and how those leadership challenges can be met and actually can lead to a growth in leadership. And today, Phil is going to be leading us in a discussion of
navigating
the interim season. Phil?
Brett, I'm going to get you, if you would,
sure.
Be the clicker. I'm in the designated clicker this week. Well, first of all, thanks for being here. We see some new faces, and I'm always thrilled to see folks that stay all the way through Friday at the lectures. I think the best is always reserved for last. If you don't believe it, stay until tonight and see the grand finale at Smothers Theater, right?
Yeah.
So Brett and a number of others will be performing. There'll be humor and music, and it's really high-quality stuff. So I'm thankful that you're here, and I don't want to waste your time with me talking about stuff that's unimportant. We believe that navigating the interim is a spiritual journey. And that spiritual journey means that we have to tune our hearts to what God and the Holy Spirit are doing. We need to tune our hearts to what God is doing in our church and what He's calling us to in His mission. And so for us, one of the most important things of all is to help a church tune its heart to God's call for their future. Because you cannot know who to call to be your minister until you know where God is calling you to in your ministry as a church. It's like getting married. You know, there's all sorts of good-looking men, there's all sorts of good-looking women, and God may have one of those for you, but He may have somebody else because of His call in your life. And if you've been around long enough, loving somebody's not enough. You got to have a shared commitment to honor the Lord and a shared commitment to the journey, and that same principle is true in churches. So I want to begin with a passage of Scripture. This is a major transition that we find in the Bible, and as we talked about yesterday, we want to point people to scriptural transitions to help them know we've been this way before as a people, and God has been faithful. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out. And they went to the Jordan where they camped before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the Levitical priests carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. And then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. A couple of key things that I want you to grab from this. We need to go back, brother. And let's just, a couple of key things that I want to point out to you. Even though this was a battle, we know that repeatedly through the book of Joshua, it was a holy journey that they were on, much more than a physical warfare battle. And so what Joshua wants the people to do is to look for the movement of God. And that's what the Ark of the Covenant represents, is the presence of God. So we want to look where God is working. We want to go where God is going. We can't create a wave, but we want to ride the wave of the Holy Spirit in the direction of the ministry opened up to us. And so one of the keys is learning some listening principles and investigating opportunities. The second thing is, I want you to notice that the leaders lead. Now that may seem redundant, but leaders have got to lead. They've got to be the ones that are tuned to God. And in an interim season, you want your shepherds to shepherd, you want your ministers to minister, and you want to raise up a new group of people to step into ministry roles that are spiritual people, so that the church can do its work and minister to its people and reach out to its community, but it can also find a minister. And then, this is true for many folks. We've never been this way before. There are all sorts of ways to do a search. Often it's done like you do a corporate search. Who's most qualified? Who has the most experience? Do they fit in our age group? And nobody asked. Are they tuned to the mission of God that God has called us to? So we want to go the way of God. And even though we haven't been this way before, we want to give people some way markers. And that's what we're going to look at in just a second. And this final piece has been the most important piece to me in the searches that I've been involved in. A call to consecration. Teaching people to pray and fast at key points. To say, this is a spiritual journey. This is not a job search. This is not a personnel search. This is a spiritual opportunity to let God tune us to His grace. Now let's jump in. And I don't know that I would have chosen all these words exactly as the key words, but they get to the point, and you can remember them. It's going to be an A through S, the six compass points, so to speak, of navigating the interim season. Acceptance is crucial. We want our congregation to accept. The old minister is gone. A new minister is coming, but we believe God has plans for us. To accept that, they need to know that there's information. And so the last couple of days we talked about communicate. Let folks know where you're going. And in addition, there has to be a plan. If they know there's a plan to bring in a new minister, then they can go about teaching three-year-olds. They can go about ministering the rest of them. They can go about doing LST or Friends Speak in the community, because they know the life of the church is going to go on and there's a plan for the future. Second, balance. There is an art to the interim. And there's a delicate balance that you make where you extend people in change for transformation, but you give them taste of what is familiar. And that balance between change and consistency is important. That's why in a summer season, when your preacher is off on a mission trip for 3 months, it works fine to have different members of the congregation preach for 3 months. But you add a bunch of change and uncertainty, and you don't know that guy's coming back, then it's all out disorder, and it creates this ill at ease feeling. We don't know what's going to happen. We're not sure we want to bring people here. We don't know where we're going. Let's look at the third one. Challenge. And the challenge is to help our people move from fear to faith. And so this is where, you know, this is my Bible now, okay? So this is where we point folks. We have stories. One of the great resources that Mark has given us is he's got this series on on Exodus and Numbers about how God provided for the people in the wilderness. Yesterday, we brainstormed on stories of people that were great interim leaders. And so when we can point our folks in faith that God has been this way before, He's led His people this way before, and out of this milieu of mush, you know, church can sometimes feel like mush. You're not sure exactly there's anything firm to grab a hold of. We can point to faith and say, we know God's at work here. Okay, let's look at the next one. It's development. You've got two choices with the interim, just like you have with the summer season. It can be a slump, or it can be a time of preparation for growth. You can sit and wait for something to happen, or you can till the soil and mulch it and prepare it to receive seed. And so in the interim, we focus on developing new leadership, especially through the search team, and then walk with that search team in a series of crescendoing processes of spiritual formation, communal discernment, prayer and fasting, waiting on the Lord, praying with candidates. And as they go through these spiritual practices, then they're enriched and ready to step into leadership and are built-in supporters of the new minister when they come. Emotion. There's always emotion when you're in the middle of transition. You remember if you moved recently, how tumultuous that was. If you sent a kid off, especially your first or last to college, you know how emotional that can be. And part of that emotion involves frustration because things are different. But when you hear back that your kid's doing great in college, it just increases the anticipation. What is God doing in them? We've worked all this time for them to go to the next step. Well, the same principle is at work when you talk about a church in transition. You want to acknowledge the emotion inside. Sometimes it is frustrating because you miss the old preacher. I tell a story in a lot of places where I go, and I think I have about 1 minute, so I want to do this quickly. And their names were Dan and Vale. And that sold a huge piece of property in Austin, and they were dirt poor. And they moved into a house that was about 1,800 square foot that they thought was the biggest mansion because they never believed they could live in a place like that. And when I moved into a little church in Elgin, Texas, they were the only people, and I'm not exaggerating, they were the only people in town that were sad to see the former preacher go. I had a really low bar to be successful. If I didn't get in fights with the umpires on the baseball diamond or fights with a neighbor that lived next door to the parsonage, I was a success. And that's not an exaggeration. But they loved this guy. And they felt very less than. And so when I came in, their emotions were really, really dark. And they thought I didn't like them and I looked down on them. And by the time we left, we had lunch with them about once a month. We loved them to death, and they loved us. Part of that is the elders kept saying, we know him. You're going to love him. Give him time. And that's part of what leadership does. It's, yes, there's frustration, but this is at work. This is at work. These are some things we're doing. These are some things we're learning. This is the mission that we've learned about. Our vision team has helped us focus on this. Our assessment of our missional opportunities in the community have reminded us of this. Here are some other things that other churches are doing to work in our community. We believe God's going to lead us to those. And then the final one is our focus. And at first, some folks are frustrated because the first 3 months of the process, we don't have on my name of a person or two that's going to be the preacher. Mm-hmm. Because they want instant results. But this becomes the pre-season of interim is often the most important, where you help the church learn its mission, tune its processes to those mission, that mission, and then the people begin to move. And so one of our partners is Doug Peters, and I went to the church where he used to preach. And there was an immediate drop of 10% when he left. and that almost always 5 or 10% because they're connected to the preacher. We're now above where they were when he left, not because of me, but because the ministries of the church have actually heightened. They've gone from 30 to 60 people on Wednesday nights in French speaking. And that happens because of these way markers, because they knew the search was happening and it was being handled spiritually, so they needed to do their ministry. So I point you to these as some of the way markers of navigating the interim season. And I'm going to let Tim come follow up. If you want to get a picture of that, or you would like to get a copy of any of our slides over the last couple of days, just let me know.
Thanks, Phil. I always think when one of the other guys presents how proud I am to be associated with what you just heard in 12 minutes. A pretty good overview of the kinds of things we try to manage in church transition. So, Phil, I thought that was wonderful. Thank you. We're going to take a few minutes anyway and give you a chance to respond to what you just heard, ask questions about it, make comments. Any of these in particular strike you as critical to get your arms around as we think about churches in transition?
I think they're all challenging. And I think the way that Phil has presented, they really all need to be looked at, step back and looked at as a whole.
Yeah.
That it's not one piece to focus on and kind of take the others for granted.
In fact, let's emphasize that. This is not a sequential. You don't take these first acceptance, then balance. You know, this is something that has to be handled simultaneously. All of these things are coming at you at once, which is part of what makes the transition season so challenging. You're dealing with all of these colors, and you have to paint with them all at the same time. That's a good point. Yeah.
Would you say these steps are applicable to any transition in the church, not just from, you know, change of leadership or preacher, but just a leader leading a church through a transition, that all this applies the same way?
Oh, I would suspect so. It doesn't matter what the transition is. It's like with a hammer. It doesn't matter whether you hit a finger, a toe, or your head. There are going to be some symptoms that are similar across the board. And in transition, you're going to trigger some frustrations. You're going to bring up the whole emotions, focus. Where are we going? What process are we going to use to get there? So yeah, I would imagine that whatever the transition is, you're going to be touching on a lot of these things.
And you know, there's an old saying for those in counseling or ministry: the presenting problem is never the real problem. And when we treat symptomology rather than pursue spiritual practice,
right,
then we end up chasing a rabbit,
right,
and get ourselves lost in the woods.
That's right.
And so I think these principles are pretty applicable across the board to major transitions.
Good. Yeah.
What percentage of the churches you guys work with have prior to the transition have done any kind of succession plan?
Any kind of
succession plan?
Yeah. 2%? Dave, after 26 years, told us yesterday he's working through a succession plan. Our churches don't handle succession plans very well. Both Phil and I can give testimony. We came to our elders and begged them, let's put together a succession plan. I'm not going to be here a year from now. Fair warning. Let's put together a succession plan so that we can make this. And my elders just said, yeah, that's a good idea. We'll talk about that. 6 months passed, nothing. Another 6 months, nothing. And so I finally just told my elders, I don't know who's going to be preaching July 1, but it ain't going to be me. And that's not the way to do things, but we don't handle succession very well.
It's really hard from inside. And this brother right here is working on a plan too, if you're involved in that. The Doug is working with a church in the Ohio River Valley. And they came to the preacher and said, we want to have a succession plan. He had been there a long, long time. And 6 years later, after two failed attempts with associate ministers, they called us.
Yeah.
And some of that was the nature of the place and the nature of the system. But it's also when you have a lot of guys that are used to hiring and firing people, mm-hmm. then they have a tendency to want to use those practices.
Yeah.
And then if there's not the spiritual underpinning of it, they get themselves in trouble. So there's some of that, and I know a couple of guys, but I can't tell you who they are that are in our brotherhood that are on this program fairly regularly that have succession plans. But that only works if you begin early in your ministry with mentoring and the elders affirm that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good question.
Tim, it strikes me that these six elements are ones that really need to be in place all the time unless you're in a stagnant church. In the last 18 months, in our congregation, we removed the pews and put in chairs. And I will have more to say about that.
That's worse than painting the walls.
We hired a full-time associate minister, and we put in elders. Of the three of those, the one that we did not follow this process with was the pews, and that was the one that got the ire up of a certain segment of the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Our leaders made the mistake of just going ahead and doing it without the process, and it created disruption unnecessarily and antagonism that lasts to this day.
And let me just put an appendix on that. I have seen in churches where they work through this with through two, three, four-ish. I've watched churches get to the point where elders are given permission, just go on and change it. Then you can make, come on in. Then you can make the decision. But until you demonstrate this kind of thoughtfulness, this kind of inclusiveness, this kind of look over the horizon, before you demonstrate that and prove that, they don't trust you to do that.
So. And if you're using this all the time, then it's much easier to use it in a transition. And what you're saying, that then the leadership is trusted.
Yes.
So they're willing to accept most anything, that it's not too far.
In fact, let me say this, and you think about it, and I have to go to the next slide, if you would. You're right. When you're in transition, it's not that suddenly these things become important where once they weren't. When you're in transition, it's suddenly that these are the only things that become important. Lots of other stuff can drop to the side. But if you don't focus on this and do this well in transition, none of the rest really matters.
Anybody, well, I won't ask who has hearing aids in here. That would be rude. But I wear them. I don't have them in today because when I get in big places, they tend to be less helpful. But when you're in a transition, it's like somebody has given you a set of hearing aids and they're turned up a little too high the first time, and you go in and you flush the toilet, and you think you're going to be blown out the door. and emotionally, that's how it feels. All the volume is turned up, and all the issues are suddenly louder, and the stakes are higher. I bet these guys would affirm this. One of the things I love about coaching search teams is their new leaders that come out of search teams don't take 11 months to assimilate. That's kind of the normal time it takes for new elders to become one with an eldership. It's about 11 months. But in search teams, you learn to graciously be assertive, but you also have to commit to be graciously deferring to the will of the whole group. Those are spiritual practices most of us don't have.
I want to introduce to you Brett Testerman, and Brett, in about 2 minutes, I want you to go. He's going to talk about IMP worship, a new component that we're adding to our services. Primarily, our services are focused on helping churches get healthy so that when we find the right guy to lead in the next season of the church's life, they're more effective and they're more productive for the kingdom. But our focus has been on lead ministry, senior ministry. Brett's going to bring a focus on worship ministry. But just before he gets up,
It's okay.
I want you to, you know, Star of David, you know, it's a 6-point. I want you to think about imposing a Star of David over this. One of the things that fascinates me about this is how each of these are so interconnected. So it's hard for you, for instance, to manage frustrations and anticipations if you don't have a focus. If you don't have a real sense of balance between, you know, celebrating your past but really looking forward to your future. If you don't, all of these things are so interconnected and they give a basis for moving forward together. You will not manage frustrations unless you're challenging your people, you're developing leaders, you're doing all of these other things. So maybe in our next one, we'll just impose a Star of David over that one and talk about interconnection. Brett, come and tell us about IMP worship.
And I would say, guys, if any of you are going through worship transition, those 6 things are incredibly important. You talk about that emotional quotient that's a part of not really preparing a church so that this transition is palatable. And we have 200 years of heartstrings attached to our music and the way we do things musically. And you can really get people on edge when you start making music changes in your church and you don't go through the right processes. And so yesterday I talked more about theology of worship, and I'm not going to do that today. But what I do want to talk about as we look at the things that we're going to do in the worship ministry component, part of it is helping a church develop good theologies and philosophies of worship. And it's amazing, as I have gone into churches, the church that I'm working with now have had 4 full-time worship guides, but they could not show me a written theology of worship. And it's such an important piece, because we have to be able to articulate what we believe about things. And we've talked throughout the week about the vision and mission pieces. I would say theology of worship is predicated on a church knowing their vision, what God has called them to be, and their mission, what God has called them to do. So it may even be that as we go into churches to talk about theology of worship or philosophy of worship, that we actually find we have to back up and go through some of the missional and vision pieces so that churches are really clear on who it is that God has called them to be and what God has called them to do. But a theology of worship is really important, that we understand who it is that God has called us to be as worshipers, and that that's a part of our DNA. We spend a lot of time with churches before we ever get into a search process or talk about a transition, discussing who it is that God has called us to be as worshipers.
Brett, quick question.
Yeah.
You just worked with Providence Road.
Yes.
And you wrote, based on conversations with them and their mm-hmm. elders, and you wrote a kind of a theology of worship for the Providence Road Church.
I did.
Is that right?
I did.
How long a document was that?
It's 6 pages.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then what I found, what flowed out of that theology of worship piece that I did, was they were transitioning. It was a unique situation because Greg Anderson was also, one of our partners, was also working with them to hire a new senior minister, which Jeff Walling was there. His son, Taylor Walling, had been their worship guy for 3.5 years and was incredibly gifted. But he got an opportunity to move into being on the teaching team with Rick Atchley at the Hills. And so he transitioned out two months after Jeff. So they were already, Greg had already taken them through the vision and mission piece, which really kind of set the table for me to come in then and talk with the transition team about this theology of worship piece. So there was a good foundation already laid. But what flowed out of that, they knew they were bringing in a new senior minister who had never worked with a worship minister before. So when you talk about creating narratives in worship, which are things that we try to teach, our churches haven't done this well because our history is not that long with worship ministry. And typically, what happens in our assemblies, it's all predicated around what the guy's preaching on. And it really is that way even as you develop worship narratives. The main course at the meal is the sermon. It's the things that we're talking about. But what are the sides that we garnish that meal with? What are the components that make this meal savory and palatable? So those are things that you really have to teach people. How do you build, design worship so that it moves people to a place? So that there's this thread woven through your assemblies that help connect the dots for people. And a lot of that's tied into that theology of worship piece. We ended up coming back and writing a 16-page technical document so that when they get the new worship guy in, and Matt, their new senior minister, they really understand how to design worship together. What are not the 50,000-foot viewpoint, theology, philosophy, but what are the technical aspects of designing worship? So those are things that we find we need to do with certain churches also. Then we talk about transitional seasons. And it looks a lot different for different churches. You may be a church that will never have what I would consider a formal worship ministry. You have a song leader kind of doing what song leaders have always done. But you still come to a place like Pepperdine and you experience a moving worship experience and you say, can we figure out a way to make our worship more dynamic? And there's some simple things that could be done over a weekend with a group of leaders or in kind of a seminar fashion where you could bring me or one of the guys in that could really help churches transition and move their worship forward in that way. Or it may be somebody saying for the first time, we've never had a worship minister or a praise team. How do we do this? What are the nuts and bolts we need to know? And half of it is knowing what not to do. But who are the kind of people we need to look for? What are the gifts and competencies we need to understand? And so we help teach those kinds of things. Maybe you've had a worship ministry, but you've blown through three or four worship guys and you can't understand why a guy won't stay for more than 2 years. And so we go in and kind of examine processes and dynamics of leadership and begin to identify what are the variables. If you've never been around worship ministers, and not that we can all be lumped in to one group, but they're different cats.
Amen.
They're different kind of guys. And so how do we handle the dynamic of leading people who don't fit into the same category as left-brained people? Mm-hmm. It's a delicate balance, and so that's a transition. A fourth transition, and there's not as much of this in our little neck of the woods, but it's becoming more and more and more. Our churches that are actually transitioning and adding some instrumental services and different things in that regard, doing a lot of that now with churches, especially some of the larger churches. And then the last thing is coaching and mentoring. If you know much about our Christian colleges, Abilene has a little bit of a worship ministry component now, but it's even limited. Mm-hmm. And so the guys who are raising up and doing worship ministry, they don't really have a lot of training teaching on how to do it. And just because you graduate with a Bible degree, which I think is helpful in worship ministry, if you're going to sit with a senior minister and design worship, you need to have more than nuts and bolts to bring to the table. Yeah. But there's not a lot of teaching on how do we do this? How do we create narratives? How do we do all the different things? So we do a lot of coaching and mentoring with guys. And churches will hire a guy because they feel a comfort level with him. And they believe that he has the skills and competencies and he's a talented musician. But he's never worked with a staff before. He's never sat with a board of elders and had a meeting with a group of leaders. He doesn't know how to manage volunteers and give the volunteers that he's working with the things that they need to not frustrate them. Mm-hmm. And typically, they need help administratively. And so even assessing their skills and what they bring to the table is an important thing. And so we do a lot of that kind of thing. So those are the three main things, and obviously there's more things along the way, but helping do the theology of worship, helping churches through transition, and providing coaching and mentoring will be a big part of what we do.
Great. The thing we're so excited about, and who knows, you know, we're still trying to figure out whether this is going to be a match, how supportive the processes we've developed over the years are going to be for Brett as he... But look at... For the last 7 years, this is what I've been doing with churches, helping them understand who are they, what's God call on their life, where are they going, helping churches transition to new seasons of ministry, period, pulpit ministry in particular, and then providing coaching and mentoring and encouragement. That's what we've been doing. That's what we're about with the pulpit side. And to be able to take that with the worship side and provide some structure and help and support for an increasingly important component of our church's ministry. I'm really excited about that. I think that's going
to
be fun.
Just to add one more thing, because that emotional piece is so important to this. But if you think about it, in the typical church that has, obviously, a senior minister and a worship guy, those are the two guys that get the most face time. They're the most emotionally connected to the church. And that's why I think there's a good marriage here and why they fit together.
And there's got to be a good marriage between the preaching minister and the worship minister.
So that search process is about identifying who we are as a church and who's going to best fit into this from a philosophy perspective and a personality perspective.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, very cool.
We got about 5 minutes left, so... I want to give that back to you. I'll have a comment at the end. But any questions, any comments about your church, about transitions you're experiencing, questions you have about what your near future might look like? Yeah.
I had a question. We actually have an interim minister right now. We're coming towards the end of our search process for a new minister. And so that's coming up very soon in the next couple months. That's a very exciting time for the church. As interim ministers, are there things that y'all do to set them up for success as far as focus and getting the leadership team together and on the same page? What sort of things do you guys do before that guy actually gets there?
Yeah, I'll let each of us name one. Let me tell you one for myself. We develop a 100-day plan for a candidate. So just like the president has a plan for the first 100 days of his office, we develop a 100-day plan. Who are the strategic coffees you need to have with people in this church? Which particular ministries do you need to get up to your elbows in right away? What do you need to be preaching on that first 100 days to kind of set the rhythm and the themes of your... So that's one of the things we do, is sit down and work out a 100-day plan so they hit the ground running rather than spend the first 100 days fumbling about figuring out, you know, where do we start? Mark, what's another thing we do?
I think a lot of it has to do with spending the time to communicate the process that we've been through during that interim season and try to walk this new guy through. Here's the process that we've been through. Here are the factors that have gone into the understanding of mission. Here were the sticky points. Here were the things that were difficult and challenging for this group to work through, so that they have an idea of the lay of the land in terms of the dynamics of how things have been arrived at.
So they're not stepping in, reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Good. Phil, what?
One of the things that we have not talked about today, we have a series of assessments we do with the congregation. Some of them are through SurveyMonkey. Some of them are done by the search committee. And so when North Davis brings in their new preacher in Arlington, which I believe will be the end of May, I think we're pretty much there, there will be a notebook of information about everything, demographics in the church, how the church feels about certain things, direct response. Then there's this, the there's a mission assessment that talks about missional opportunities in the neighborhood, and here are some churches that are doing well, and this church has been a major leader in the community. So the person has to know that coming in, because since Katrina, they've been kind of the go-to church for a lot of that. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I go a step further than the 100-day plan, and I challenge the eldership and the new preacher in months 6 through 9 to come up with a strategic plan of how they're going to address their mission in the next 2 years and present that to the congregation to get a little ramp up while you're still in the honeymoon and still thinking about mission, so that it's pointed. These are the three things we're going to do. We're going to keep doing our ministries, but these are the three things we believe God's calling us to do.
So the message there is, after a long, arduous search process, the temptation is to go, glad that's over. Well, sorry, you just reached the 10-mile mark of the marathon. And so there's a lot of work that you've done to make sure that that ministry has popped at the very beginning. Great question.
Do you do similar assessments of the potential staff member and the current leadership to see where personality and other issues might be important?
Yes. Not always. But when we think that there's potential for conflict or not seeing eye to eye, or there's a particular staff member we're worried about, then we can do some DISC assessments and some group dynamic assessments, and we do that. That sometimes that can be very helpful. It's a rather lengthy, involved process. You have to have people who know what they're doing, but yeah, that can be helpful.
There is an organizational health survey we do at most churches that help us get a reading on that. Mm-hmm. And at 11:52 last night, I got an email from one of our Hope Network partners, John Mulliken, saying we got to talk about this. And he showed me a recent survey assessment that he had done that I'd brought him in, because there were some, and we've got some hard work to do on some things before it's really safe to bring a minister in. And they're locked. They don't know how to, they know the problem. They just don't know how to get around the dance that they've been hung in.
And that, again, is part of the advantage, Dave, of having somebody come in with a tool set that isn't necessarily, the local guys don't necessarily have.
So 50 miles away.
I'd like to chat about that another time, about my experience in the church planning circles, the things they're doing.
Good.
I realized would have been very helpful in some of my own transitions in ministry.
Good. Okay, we'll quit. Here's the message we invite you to take out to others. Number one, transition season is a time of incredible opportunity. Almost all good things that happen in the kingdom of God happen in times of transition. Just think about that statement. Number two, transition seasons require a different kind of leadership and emphasis on a different saliva. And so we want to encourage you, when you as a leader face a time of transition, recognize there are certain things that must come before. And then, as Phil talked about today, there are some consistent core things that come to the surface during times of transition that we have to pay attention to, that are not optional. If you can take that message, this is going to be a fun ride. I get a chance to really lead in transformative ways, and there are some things that we should focus on during this time. If you can do that as a leader in a time of transition, you will bless your church and move them from transition to transformation. Thanks for being with us. Ken has been here all 3 classes, so I've got a Starbucks gift card for you.
Just 100.